Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Oh, you're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 224, brought to you by Emerald City Comic Con C2E2, in stock trades, and iFanboy listeners like you.
So you're doing a bit.
I'm so tired.
iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 224. And before I get started, you couldn't fix the script, guys?
What are you talking about, Josh?
Read it as it's written. Read the script.
My name is not Tom Caters. You know what? This is my goddamn show. And I got to tell you, I've had a stressful couple of weeks, and all I see on the internet was, man, that guy is awesome. You should keep him.
He was awesome. Did you listen?
I did listen. He was awesome. The show was really good. I was like, maybe I shouldn't go back. Let me ask you this. Do I have to do the show anymore?
No, you don't have to do anything, my friend.
As long as I can get a paycheck, I'm fine with that.
I've been saying I killed my brother to myself all week.
It's so funny. You tweeted that to me and I laughed out loud.
I'm Josh Flanagan. I'm back, if not in spirit than in body.
I'm not well rested.
I'm a lot better than I was yesterday. It's a game of inches. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Connor Kilpatrick. iFanboy.com.
Oh, wait. Well, I don't get to say hello?
I'm angry at you. Right. iFanboy.com is our website that we made because we really, really love comics. We can reread them. Every week we read a whole bunch of them. Then one of us has the job of picking the one that they like best. We call that the pick of the week. They write up a review about it on the website. Then we come talk about it on the podcast along with other books from the week and stuff, other kinds of stuff. Stay tuned during the show for details about iFanboy at Emerald City Comic Con. And before we get to the show, we just want to let you know that this is a review show, so we'll be talking about things that happen in the book. So if you haven't read them, they're going to be spoilers. Come back later after you do, perhaps. Or just caution to the wind, you know, balls out.
Before I get to my pick on the Emerald City Comic Con, normally we say stay tuned to the end of the show, but Emerald City stuff is going to be during the show. So if you want to hear what we're doing in Seattle next weekend, listen to the whole show. It's going
to
come up.
Make sure you listen to the middle.
When you least expect it.
A lot of you guys like to get bored in the middle. Ugh, let's just get to the outro. Ron, you had the pick this week. Go.
I did have the pick of the week this week, and we've been very critical over the past year of Buffy the Vampire Slayer from Dark Horse Comics.
At least a year.
Connor, you and I have been leading the charge in this. Mm-hmm. So much so.
Well, it comes from pain because we used to love it so much.
Yeah, well, and so much so that you dropped it, right? You gave up. It's okay. You can admit it. When Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 8 started, Jesus, it's up to issue 33. So started well, like over 2 years ago. It was great. It was like, and I wrote my review on iFanboy.com. I've had a rough go with Buffy. Like I tried to get into the TV show. I couldn't. And then I'm like, well, you know, I like the idea of doing the comics. I'm read the comic. And that actually got me into the TV show. But then the comic started sucking and it got me out of the TV show. And it's just up and down, up and down. But we talked about Buffy number 32 that came out about a month ago with Brad Meltzer and how it was just like, oh, wow, it's really good again. Like it's I don't know what happened. And for those of you – well, I know what happened. Brad Meltzer wrote it. But for those of you Buffy fans and non-Buffy fans, you probably have heard of Buffygate and the whole Twilight reveal scandal that happened in January. And this was the issue that was – or December it was. This was the issue that the hubbub was over, was that this was the – it's the second part of, I think, a five-part arc that Brad Meltzer is writing that reveals the identity of Twilight, the villain of this entire season. And it was revealed to be Angel was the villain. And it was supposed to be this big, you know, classic comic book shocker. You didn't see it coming. You had no idea.
Except you did.
IDW is doing an Angel book, so how could he even be in this book? But for whatever reason, you know, and it sucks that it happened, but it got leaked and the wrong cover got published on CBR and blah-de-de-blah-de-blah. And it's just another example of this fascination I have with knowing what happens in our comics these days and knowing what happens in our stories. I firmly believe that the age of the true surprise twist is over. Like, I don't think we will ever be surprised by something that happens in a comic book again.
Totally not.
But yeah. What if the Punisher shows up at the last page, though?
That's always awesome. But
yeah, that never gets old.
Yeah, but and that actually almost kind of happens in this issue. So the thing was, I knew what the reveal was, but I'm fascinated by the journey. I'm fascinated about how a writer and the artist get us there. And I think that's what the enjoyment of comics and stories and even movies and TV stuff like that has to be now, is that, you know, there's a good chance that we're going to know how Lost ends before it ends, but I really want to know how they get there. You know?
Well, in this age of people watching stuff on DVD or watching things on the DVR or watching later, time shifting everything, it's almost impossible to stay unspoiled, and you have to sort of accept that. If you're gonna you know, if you're gonna choose to not go to the movie theater and watch a movie on DVD, you're gonna accept the fact that you might hear about this movie or TV show. You just have to roll with it if that's what you choose to do.
Totally. And so I'm totally just rolling with it, and I want to see what Meltzer was gonna do. And I wrote this in my review, and I don't know if it made sense when I wrote it, because sometimes I don't do words very well.
And it was 2 a.m.
It was 2 a.m. because I saw Kick-Ass, which was awesome. But anyway, Buffy the Vampire Slayer as a comic book has been Buffy the Vampire stories told in comic book format. And this arc with Meltzer has somehow turned it into a comic book that happens to feature the characters from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Does that make sense?
Yes, I understand what you're trying to say. Yeah. That before it was more like an adaptation of a show, whereas now they've totally embraced the idea of this is a comic book and writing it like a comic book.
Exactly, and also with Meltzer writing, like, and I also realized I was doing my review, I'm like, everything I've read from Meltzer has been really heavy. You know, was it Identity Crisis or his run on Justice League? Even his stuff on Green Arrow was just like, and with this, it feels like he's having fun. Like he's got the voice of these characters down, and the fun kind of oozes off every page, mostly highlighted by Buffy and Xander's kind of exchanges in the last issue and in this issue as they're discovering why Buffy now seems to have superpowers and where's it coming from, and they're trying to figure it out. That's, you know, that happens in the first part of this book, but then the majority of this book ties into the revelation of who Twilight is and Buffy confronting him and him revealing that he's Angel and them dealing with it. And even knowing what was going to happen, I didn't see the end of this issue coming from a mile away. Like, and it tapped into everything that made Buffy special and everything that was fun about Buffy. And at the end of the issue, I was just like, wow, you know, like Meltzer's nailing it. He's just nailing this comic book, and it's totally back. And I'm babbling to myself because I'm the only one reading it now, and no one else can share with me of this. But
damn you, Richards. Damn you. Damn you, straight to hell. I had dropped this book, and then you raved about the last issue, and then you made this one the pick of the week, and I...
You picked them up? You got them?
I read them.
Oh, yes! Conversion. So am I right, or am I off base?
You were right.
Ah, yes, the best words in the
English
language.
Tell your sister.
Tell your sister.
You were right.
Ah! Yeah, no, these were fantastic. These were harkening back to the glory days of Buffy, which was about two years ago.
2007.
This book was a top five book for me. We did that one of those barbecue shows where we had to pick our top five. Buffy was in it. Mine. Yeah. I used to love this book, and this was, you're right, so much fun.
A breath of fresh air. I laughed out loud in tons of spots,
and it's hard to differentiate between two books because I read them back to back today. In fact, so it's hard to differentiate. But there was so many really funny scenes, and really inventive scenes. And I think what really helps, this was something we talked about a long time ago when Brian K. Vaughan wrote the Faith arc. It's almost better to have a writer that's really removed from the universe.
Well, and I think that's been the problem, because the last couple of writers that have done the arcs that have been really bad have been both Joss, which is surprising, Joss Whedon as well as his TV writers.
Except for Drew Goddard.
Drew Goddard was really good. But who's the woman who wrote it? I forget her name.
Jane Espenson.
Yeah. She's a good writer, but it wasn't there.
Galactica stuff, but she wrote that whole horrible reality TV one shot. She was one of the best. Just for whatever reason, that whole last year hasn't been working. But bringing in a guy who's not from the stable of TV writers really was an injection of energy and creativity into this.
Yep.
And you're right. The whole ending of this issue was, you know, you expect it to go one way and it goes a completely opposite way, and you're just like, whoa, what does that mean? And
my only criticism of it was the thing that I did love in it is that, and you probably read it from issue 32 and a little bit so here, is that Meltzer's really playing up the comic book references and the geek kind of references in a good way, not in a bad way. But early in the book, there's a scene where Giles and Faith and this Andrew character are held captive by Twilight. And at some point, Andrew gets away and he attacks Twilight, and Twilight turns around and Andrew's wearing Luke's helmet from Star Wars. He's got a Iron Man glove on. He's got a Punisher bulletproof vest. He's got Captain America's shield. He's got a Batman belt, and he's got a Star Trek tricorder powering the Iron Man glove. And he says it's clobbering time. I don't know how that he got that stuff or why, they never went back to it. But it made me laugh.
They're super nerdy, super geniuses who built in the last issue the Teen Titans Death Machine. So
the Simonson thing, right? Yeah.
So they probably have a whole room full of weapons based off of stuff they love. Yeah.
It was a hysterical. It's a great panel, and it made me crack up. It was great.
A licensing nightmare in that one.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know how they did what they got. I mean, it's blatant. It's the Punisher skull. It's Captain America's shield. It's the Batman logo. It's crazy, but
comics, no one pays attention to that
exactly
shit.
But it was good, and I don't
well this is a very obscure book, to be fair. Who's ever heard of Buffy the Vampire
exactly
Slayer?
It's not popular
except for the millions of people who watch the TV show.
But I don't want to you know, Meltzer has been great, but and we talk about it every time we talk about Buffy, but George Jonty owns this book as far as art.
Yes,
and
he's done every issue.
He's pretty much, there's been a couple of fill-ins and a couple of different artists here and there, but for the majority,
but for the most part, I mean, yeah. 33, I wouldn't be surprised if he did 30 of the 33.
The arcs have been all him. Yeah,
so that's got to be really helpful in especially when you're switching artists around like that. But
it really holds the universe together, and the look is always consistent. The characters always look like they should. It's never jarring.
Which I think, and I don't know, but I just wanted to be able to say something. But it makes it feel more like a TV season in a way.
Yes, exactly. Because it's consistent.
The show always looks the same.
Yeah. And the thing is that I really think we see a lot of licensed comics from Dark Horses and IDW and Boom and stuff like that. I think Jonty is setting the standard for the visual look of a licensed comic where you're drawing characters of people that really exist in the world. And
without making it look like you've paused the DVD.
Exactly. Because it's creepy. It's creepy when they're drawn to look too much like them. You know, like you show me Buffy in the comic book, I'm like, yeah, that's Buffy, but I don't think it's Sarah Michelle Gellar. So,
no, but it looks enough like her that you're never confused,
right? Exactly.
And you can pick out all the characters based enough like their counterparts. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I only watched half the series, so a lot of the late show characters, I don't really know who they are, but I assume they look just as well as Xander and Buffy and Willow and Angel do and Giles. So.
They do.
But you're absolutely right. Jonty is the MVP of this book.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. So I love Buffy. It's fantastic. Back on, please. They could lock up Meltzer just to finish the run or something. I think that would be the best decision. So,
is it ending at 40? So it should be.
Yeah, I think it's ending at 40. Yeah, I think Joss comes back and writes the last one, which is fine if he wants to do that. So I guess he gets to.
He's allowed.
Yeah. But yeah, Buffy the Vampire Slayer is fantastic. So it's the second issue of this arc. I mean, if you dropped off, pick it back up. And I saw a lot of people in the comments saying that based off my review and our raving, they're going to go back and pick
it up. You know what? I would recommend they do that. Yeah, I did the same thing, and I was you were totally right. Yeah. Vindication.
Yes.
You know, this was a weird week. There wasn't, for me, a book that really jumped out of the stack and said, hey, pick me. There was a lot of stuff I enjoyed. But one I really enjoyed was a book that I thought totally buried the lead on the cover.
Yes.
That was Wolverine Weapon X number 11, which is a cover of Wolverine and Deathlock. And Deathlock is a character from the 90s. He was
before the 90s. I mean, he was in the 90s. But
he was really popular in the 90s.
Nah, and, I don't know about that, but yeah.
Everyone I know read Deathlock books in the 90s, in the late 80s and early 90s. He's a futuristic bounty hunter, I guess is who he is, or an assassin. I don't really know anything about Deathlock. But that's the cover. The inside, the story, is about Steve Rogers and Wolverine going on a pub crawl.
Right, with Nightcrawler being the designated driver in the X-Jet.
Yeah, reconnecting after Steve came back from the dead.
Yep.
And I was, you know, that's the lead.
Yep, big
time. That's what you need to have on your cover. And Ron Garney's drawing it. Ron Garney's famous
for
drawing Captain America. Yeah. And it was, I loved this issue. This was, I would have loved, and the B story was Deathlock hunting down people who will affect the future, but I loved the A story with Cap and Wolverine trying not to be overly emotional. But these guys have known each other since World War II.
The Deathlock stuff is laying the groundwork for this story arc. I mean, that's going to be the main.
Yeah, Deathlock says I have to kill Captain America, so obviously.
Yeah.
But I just loved the A story, which was great.
Yeah. It was really good. And to see some of the interaction, the character interaction. I mean, again, Jason, I mean, we said it with the last issue. Wolverine Weapon X is the best Wolverine book being published by Marvel right now. And if you're not reading it, you're totally missing out. Because Jason Aaron is nailing the character moments and the conversations between them. And Steve, you know, thanking Wolverine for sticking with the Avengers while he was gone. And Wolverine telling Steve about his girlfriend. And it's great.
I love my slow realization because I sort of blew past the title page, which has Captain America on it. And I'm like, that's weird. And then there's he does a great job of revealing where they're walking. We just see their belt buckles, and I was like, why does that guy have a star on his belt buckle?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Steve. Like, that was. I just love this. I'm so happy about Steve being back in the first place. I love the hangout issue. I love the issue you get where they get to be themselves and reveal character.
That's what's great is that not only was it a hangout issue, but it wasn't like an in-between one-off. It's part of it's the first story of this arc. So this is a great issue to jump on with.
Yes.
But what I love was, Jason Aaron, the natural humor and just, kind of the brotherly kind of love between the guys just came out so strong. And it just like it's, Jason Aaron, I know you got, I'm late to the game with Jason Aaron because I know you guys have been loving Scalped and I don't read it and stuff like that. But Jason Aaron might be one of the best writers at Marvel right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Plus, next issue, the cover is Bucky Cap and Wolverine fighting a bunch of Deathlocks. So yep,
by Garney.
If you're into the whole Avengers story right now, I think you should jump on Wolverine Weapon X number 11 and go to town because it really fits in well with what's happening. It's really good.
Totally. So we have a new segment in iFanboy. It's gonna be the segment where we focus on cannibalism. And we got two comics this week that we're gonna be talking about cannibalism.
I don't know what the other one is.
Oh, you
but,
will.
Let's start. I think I do now. Let's talk about Chew. This book, I saw people raving about it, and like you just noticed people are really enjoying it. The rating on iFanboy is really, really high. And I read through it and I was like, oh, it's pretty good. It's fine. And then I just like it was one of those last pages where I laughed really hard and was like, oh, that's great.
I thought the ending really built the issue up. Like I thought the pacing of the cliffhanger getting bigger with every panel until you get the big panel cliffhanger was fantastic.
It was like the last page was just you just did not see that. I don't want to ruin it for anybody because it's, it actually is a comic book surprise in a way. Not necessary, but just like a really like joke that you just didn't see coming is really well drawn, and it was really good. This arc has been fun and entertaining, but I don't know if I've been enjoying it all that much, but I really enjoyed this issue. Although
there's something about the I almost feel like it's the sophomore. It's not the, I don't want to say sophomore slump, but I don't feel myself as excited about Chew. And maybe because there was more did they take a month off or
yes
yeah so yeah. I think that might have
they're
to
taking
something.
A month off between arcs if they've already stated they're going to do that every arc.
Yeah, so I mean maybe it was something where I just kind of like it doesn't feel as vital and amazing as it did in the first arc, but that doesn't change the fact that this was a great issue and it was really good, and the cliffhanger stuff at the end was cracking me up.
I think Rob Guillory's art is getting better.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely.
He's really
from a standpoint of storytelling, but also just like his humor.
Yep.
Like the way that he's drawing faces and setting up visual jokes, I think works really, really well. One of the other things that just kept impressing me as I went through this was the ability that there's this like network of different kind of food psychic or superpower food ability people.
Yep.
Yeah.
So this one has the great Fat Nieros, who is a Sibilocutor.
That was really, really cool. I like that one.
Yeah. He can't speak, so he communicates through his food.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Just another really good idea. And it's like when you want to talk about what makes good comics, it's those big, stupid ideas.
Yep.
This is just another one. Really fun issue.
Yeah. On the other side of the spectrum, demo number two was fucked up.
This book made me nauseous. It really did. I had to walk away for a while. It's demo number two from Brian Wood and Becky Cloonan. This is their second issue where each issue is a different story and told in one issue. And in this issue, we meet a man who he can't eat food. He can only eat people.
Yep.
He just can't eat food.
Not his fault.
But he meets a girl and he likes her and he wants to go on a date with her. But the problem is you can't go on a date and eat people because that tends to mean you're not going to get laid. So he tries to suck it up and eat chicken. So he just can't do it.
Well, his problem was that he when they went to a lobster place, a surf and turf place, and he ordered chicken, and I thought that was great. Because the girl's like, you ordered the chicken? What, they got lobster? They go, why'd you order the chicken? And he's just like, I like chicken. And I thought that was a very well written scene.
Then we also find out that he gets the flesh from people. He's like a serial killer.
It was very Dexter-esque scene where he walks in and there's somebody on a gurney and he gives him an injection and then he cuts him up and he stores him in this freezer and then the latter part of the book is him trying to get over it and saying I can't do this anymore, and he gets rid of all his meat and but he's like he's losing it because he's got to eat, he's hungry, and he just kind of bites his nail and then he kind of nibbles at his finger and then he's cutting chunks of himself out. That's what got
this
me.
This book made me nauseous. Yes. It really did.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make it my pick of the week, but
it was close. It was close for me.
In terms of reaction, like in every book this week, this was the one that had, you know, it may have been a negative reaction, not towards the story, but just in terms of, like, I felt like I wanted to vomit, which is a sign of a good story, because that was probably the reaction they were going for. This was real close to my pick.
I mean, it was close. I mean, it was a disturbing – it would have been a disturbing pick, and I mean, this was probably my second – this came up second for me. But, you know, but all in all, with the second issue into this demo kind of run, I almost appreciated this issue more than the first one, because this was just –
I think better. This is better. Yeah,
this was – A, it was better. The back matter I felt was more fleshed out. We got a ton of thumbnails and layouts and sketches and, you know, from Becky Cloonan. And then honestly, I love the next – I can't – when the next issue looks awesome. Like the next issue, we just got a five page preview of the next issue, and like I can't wait to get it. It looks great.
I don't normally read those, but I found myself just being drawn right into
That's
it.
That's a lot of pages.
Yeah, no,
it was full. It was a chock full of.
There's like a quarter of the next book.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
You want more, kid? Come back.
Yeah. So yeah, no, great job on demo though.
This was an interesting week. Justice League Cry for Justice number 7 came out. Finally, the conclusion to James Robinson's miniseries that was supposed to start the new Justice League, which already started.
How'd this end up for you?
Well, there's a couple of different levels going on here that surprised me with this book. Right, Connor?
I want to hear what you think.
Well, first off, before I talk about what happened in it, I did not see the art coming.
Yeah.
Like, basically, I guess Samorio Cassioli did, like, a page, maybe? And the rest of it seems to have been done by Scott Clark and Ibrahim Robertson.
It looked like it hurt it a lot.
Scott Clark, wow. It looked like Scott Clark drawing typical Scott Clark kind of Wildstorm-esque, but like it being colored and textured like it was Mario Cassioli's painting.
Yeah,
like it was just like a whimper to the finish line. There's that one page where so in the story a lot of fucked up shit happens involving
it's a theme
apparently and the main thing is that what's his name, Prometheus or whatever, he levels Star City gets destroyed, and in the destruction of Star City, Arsenal's daughter Zahn or whatever Leanne, she dies.
Red Arrow? Is he Red Arrow?
Yeah, Red Arrow, yeah. Okay, so they killed off Red Arrow's daughter. The page where that happened is probably one of the worst pages of comics I've ever seen.
You can't kill a character's daughter like that, because then that character becomes useless.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true at all.
Well, sort of, but it makes him into a certain kind of character. You know, like it makes him mopey, which is what they, you know, fix Spider-Man or something like that. Like all of a sudden you got this super sad character. I don't know. That's not how I think of what Red Arrow is.
Right.
Well, he's already had lots of problems. I mean, he's certainly a character you can go in that direction.
Yeah.
Well, like
also, no one cares about him.
No, but the thing is, I'm less worried. Yeah, right. Nobody cares, but I'm less worried about killing the daughter. That's fine. Kill the daughter. But the page, Green Arrow's got his back to us as the reader, and you just see her legs and her hand, and you don't see Green Arrow's reaction at all. And Black Canary has her head in her face in her hand. Like in the most stiff non-reaction I've ever seen. The art was
problematic.
Yeah.
Let's be diplomatic and say the art was problematic.
Exactly.
A lot of people were mad about this. I wasn't mad. It's a way to change the whole dynamic. There's a risk you take when you start making everyone a family man.
Yep.
In that you have the Wally West syndrome is that they get sort of shunted to the side because they have a family now.
Yep.
And that's sort of what happened to Red Arrow as well. So now they have a way to sort of give him more interesting story. And it's really going to – I mean, Red Arrow doesn't know what's happened because he's in the hospital because his arm got ripped off.
Yeah.
That'll also get him.
Right now, this is affecting Green Arrow because at the end, this issue takes place before and after Blackest Night. The events of the issue take place before Blackest Night, and then we jump to the future after Blackest Night, and Green Arrow tracks down Prometheus and puts an arrow through his head.
Yep.
He sort of sticks him to the wall with an arrow through the forehead.
And just says, justice.
And I liked that a lot.
Yes,
a lot of people
did.
But I loved that. Obviously, I was raised on Mike Grell's hardcore Vertigo-esque Green Arrow. So whenever he takes the law into his own hands and does it with a vengeance, I've always liked that. I think he's too soft most of the time.
Well, Green Arrow's not Batman. It's funny that I think comic readers ascribe the Batman's ethos of doesn't kill and doesn't use guns.
Yep.
To all superheroes, and that's not the case. It's the same thing that happened to Captain America. Captain America doesn't use a gun. He does.
Yeah.
You know, Steve Rogers hasn't used one in a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Green Arrow could get pissed off enough. Also, he's had a lot of shit going on for a while, and he needed to let out some steam. Yeah.
Well, his whole city got destroyed, and then his granddaughter, or you know, unofficial granddaughter, was killed in the destruction. So yeah, putting an arrow through the guy's head who caused it, I think, is sort of justifiable.
Yeah.
Also, Prometheus was a dick. I mean, do you remember that arc of JLA? Come on.
Yeah.
So this is all leading to the big Green Arrow storyline that's going to run through his book, and I think a side miniseries, which is the fall of Green Arrow, where I think people are not going to take the murder very well in the Justice League.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
It's going to be identity crisis all over.
It was very interesting. I liked it a lot. I think I didn't get mad like people did. I thought it was a good place to take the character.
Yeah, I thought the story was interesting. I was fine with the stuff that happened. I thought it was extreme, and sometimes you got to go to extremes, and that's fine. I was just completely befuddled by the art. I just can't
believe it. Oh, the art definitely hurt.
That's unfortunate.
Story-wise, I thought it was a really interesting place to go, and sometimes you have to take your characters to dark, interesting places to sort of reinvent them. And I think a lot of characters need that, and Red Arrow is certainly one of them.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And what could you tell me about Red Arrow besides the fact that he had a lot of sex with Vixen?
Right.
Not Vixen, Hawkgirl.
Hawkgirl, yeah. Yeah, he was.
Junkie was in the 70s. I'm talking about like in the last couple of years. What has he done?
Yeah, not really.
Yeah, nothing.
In the 70s.
Well, Cheshire. He had the baby with Cheshire. He had his daughter with the villain.
Right, but that was a while ago. That was
the 90s. Yeah, Arsenal. Yeah. So earlier this week or last week, the iFanboy Don't Miss book for the week was Girl Comics number 1 from Marvel, which is the first issue of their anthology completely created by women. So what did you guys think of it?
Except for the publishing and the
except for Alan Fine.
I had the same reaction I had to Strange Tales, which is basically it's an interesting anthology. There's some stories that work better than others, and if anything, it's a nice way to expose you to creators you might normally see,
exactly.
You might not normally see. Some stories were good, some were all right, but for the most part, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I did too. I thought they did a great job, and as much as I like Strange Tales, I'm enjoying this as well, and I can't wait for the next issue.
The Punisher story was really good.
The Punisher story was really good.
It was really good, yeah.
It was the only thing I really liked about it, because I wouldn't have really bought this, not because it was girls, just because it's not the kind of comic I like.
Girls are icky.
It's one of those things, like, I'm like, I don't want to say I don't like it. Yeah. Then I'm a sexist.
Right, yeah. We're totally backed into a corner with this one. We have to like it.
I thought the Nightcrawler story was thin.
Yeah.
I didn't get it. It was not a good way to start the issue off. I hit it off on the wrong foot.
No, the Punisher one was actually really, really good. I remember thinking that it was subtle. Like, in that first panel, you're like, what? I thought they were making fun of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was like a joke. Like, he goes and chats on the internet to let off steam or whatever. And then you realized, oh, no. This is like NBC, but way better.
So, I like the Franklin for fantasy tale, and I like the Dr. Octopus short. I mean, there was some good ones in there. I thought the X-Men one at the end wasn't as strong. So I mean, it was up and down.
I'm just things that will resonate with you will resonate with others and or not resonate. And so yeah, I mean, that's what an anthology is. You don't love everything. Yep. Yeah.
I'm just glad that this comic finally achieved equality in comics. Oh, so the gender issue's taken care of now. We can move on to better things.
Well, if anything, this pointed out the lack of women in major comics.
Yep. Yeah.
That makes you.
But what was interesting, I mean, when I was talking to Janine, the editor in the Don't Miss interview, I mean, she's saying the list of people to work on it was bigger than what they could contain in it. So there are women in the industry that are working on it. So they are working.
Well, a lot of the people that are indie.
Yeah, creators. Exactly. I love that they branch out to webcomics and a lot of indie stuff. And you know, a lot of the creators on here you might not have heard of. And hopefully they get more mainstream work because they do good stuff. So
I'm really waiting for Alison Bechtel's Karnak comic. That's the one I've been really waiting for. You know, Karnak could never be completely honest with his parents about his sexuality. Did you know that? That's his one true weakness.
Oh, man.
Wow.
That was awesome. All right. So we teased it earlier in the show, but the first convention of 2010 is coming. It's the Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle. It's this weekend. Oh, my God. This upcoming weekend, March 13th and 14th. I know. Insane.
Oh, fuck.
And Connor and I will be there. Confirmed.
Have fun.
Yeah. So along with all the great dealers and exhibitors and stuff like that, and if you're in the Seattle area and you want to buy back issues or buy statues, stuff like that, Emerald City is a great show to go to for all those, you know, all those, all the booths and on the con floor. But they've got a ton of great creators that are going to be there. You got Brian Azzarello, you got Mike Allred, Ed Brubaker, Joe Casey, Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey, Jeff Johns, Alex Malieve, Terry Moore, Joe Quesada, Rick Remender, Greg Rucka, Chris Somney, and that's just a sample of all the people that are going to be there. So if you want to get sketches, you want to get books signed, Emerald City is a great show to go to. So if you haven't made plans, make your plans, get to Seattle this weekend. And they're also going to have a ton of really cool media guests, like Leonard Nimoy, Will Wheaton, get them together, a little Star Trek picture going on. Felicia Day from the Guild, that's your sort of thing. And the godfather of all comics, Stan Lee, will be there. Now's your chance to meet Stan Lee. So,
all comics, really?
All comics, modern comics. Well, modern comics.
They were a little bit. There was a few decades before Stan Lee came on.
True, but he. It's safe to say he's the godfather.
He worked at Timely from 1940.
Yeah.
And he wrote a lot of the letter columns back then.
Yeah.
So. Godfather of the letter column, we can call him that.
Anyway, so go to EmeraldCityComicCon.com. That's EmeraldCityComicCon.com. You see all the list of guests, as well as you can get advance tickets. I'm pretty sure you can still get advance tickets. If not, you can find out directions how to get to the convention center. It's this weekend, March 13th and 14th. You don't want to miss it. And we're excited to announce what iFanboy will be doing there at Emerald City Comic Con. Connor and I will be there. We're going to be doing a
drinking.
We're going to be drinking, that's for sure. But we're going to be there roaming the floor. We're going to be shooting some videos and stuff like that. Please, if you see us, stop and say hello. We can't wait to see you. Not while we're shooting, yes. Please let us do our jobs. But if you want to come see us, if you want a time where you can come see us, you can come to our panel. We are excited to announce that we're going to be doing a panel on Sunday at 1 p.m. in Ballroom 6E. This is a little late kind of planning, so we're not actually in the program guide, but we will be there, Ballroom 6E, 1 p.m. It's a huge room, so bring your friends, maybe. Let's represent iFanboy in style. And we're going to have some of the some folks from Graphically, our new corporate parents.
The overlords. So
our buddy John from Graphically is going to be there, and there's going to be some cool Graphically swag, and we'll have some info about Graphically if you're curious about it, if you want to check it out. So spread the word. If you're going to Emerald City Comic Con, please come to the panel Sunday at 1 o'clock. Please tell your friends. Please bring people. We can't wait to see you there. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/iFanboy to see where we're at through the con, stuff like that, if you want to meet up with us. But we're definitely 1 o'clock Sunday is your chance to see us at the con.
Guys. Take me with you. It's really hard here.
Anyway,
you get more sleep in Seattle.
Yeah, true.
Not really.
So,
having a baby is a lot like being at San Diego, like constantly.
Oh, jeez. Anyway, so speaking of hard, First Wave number one came out. Brian Azzarello, Rags Morales, Doc Savage, The Spirit.
I'm curious what that means.
Yeah, I want to go ahead and explain that.
Well, it's hard boiled.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Anyway,
it's a little pulpy more than hard boiled.
Pulpy. All right. Fine. I was trying the segue. Give me a break.
I thought you just really liked it.
Anyway,
I know. I got the hardcover. Really, it's one issue.
What'd you guys think? Or did you guys check it out?
I really liked it.
Yeah,
I liked it a lot.
Yeah.
I thought it was very nice looking.
Yeah. Rags Morales looked great. The art looked great. It was really.
Yeah. I didn't find myself terribly interested in the story. I don't. Maybe this is like fanboy sacrilege, but I don't really know anything about Doc Savage, so
I don't either. Like, I'm right there with you, so don't worry.
And I felt like there was some explanation about the spirit, definitely, but for Doc Savage, like, you're just kind of left to be like, all right, I guess I'll just sort of figure out who it is. Yeah. It was good.
I thought it was enough to pick up on who. I mean, I don't know. He's a very famous pulp character from the 30s, and he's been around forever, and I haven't seen a lot of stuff that he's been in, but I thought there was enough information to latch onto him, and I thought the spirit stuff was really nice to be with the spirit again.
Yeah.
Did you like the portrayal of Batman?
I'll let you know next month.
Yeah, because he's on the cover, but not in the issue.
I was positive that I was going to get to the last page and he was going to be there. I thought that too.
I really did. Yep.
I was like pleasantly surprised that he wasn't.
Yeah.
Expectations subverted.
Yeah, it was very nice. I thought that one of the things that I thought was really cool about it was that it didn't feel like a Brian Azzarello book.
Yes.
Meaning it was much more clear cut than usual. And yeah. I think the art helped a lot.
It was a great package. It was a good start to this whole kind of new mini universe that these buildings.
I like it.
Yep. So back in the category of fucked up, the Sword number 2 by the Luna Brothers from Image. Big fight that involved the main character getting her uterus ripped out.
Yikes!
It was just like, I literally read it. I was just like, really? You did that? You went there? Like,
is that okay?
Like, I don't know. Like, it was hardcore, and like,
one of the Luna Brothers had a bad breakup.
Yeah, exactly.
Or they really have mom issues. Yeah.
I just thought of Anchorman. I'm going to punch you in your ovary. I mean, like, that's what happened. Oh, Jesus.
That bitch. Yeah, I'll show her.
So Ultimate Comics, New Ultimates number 1. I fucking Loeb got me again.
I loved this.
I hated it. Oh, I thought it was awful. I was like, you know, he did pretty good on that Ultimate X one. Maybe this is pretty good. Frank Cho's art was great in this, but I hated the story, and the Tony Stark giving Carol Danvers the finger obscured by her face was just lame. And I don't know. I just didn't like it.
I really liked it a lot. I like how the books are very different. The Ultimate books don't really seem to be in the same world no matter what book it is, and that's all right with me. I like that they're all sort of on their own, and you don't have to worry about it.
And we're going
to
talk about the other Avengers. We're going to talk about the other Avengers book in a moment. Yeah. But this is I don't know. I just this was just typical Loeb that I just didn't, you know. And you know, Hawkeye complaining about his family being dead again. Like, it's just, I feel like there hasn't been any growth from Loeb with the Ultimates at all. But you liked it, so that's fine.
I didn't really read the third one, so to me it wasn't repetitive.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So did either of you guys happen to check out Stephen King's N number one?
Nope.
No.
Yeah. All Alex Maleev art book.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Which I thought you'd like, but apparently that didn't matter at all. Hey, guys, I've got pizza. Oh, we already ate. Oh, fuck it. No, but it isn't a stand book either. It's just they took a Stephen King story.
Yeah.
And it's being adapted by Mark Guggenheim. Like,
what is the story?
I don't know. Small town in Maine, weird shit happens.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. What a change.
I know. But it was an all Alex Maleev book, and it was really good looking. And it was a Stephen King story. If you like those kind of things, it's good. It's not a stand book, but that was really the thing that I was like, I felt like they should have like put that across the top. This has nothing to do
with it. Yeah, because when I saw his name, I just glossed right past it. Right, I just assume it's another stand book.
Yeah. No. Stored on its own. So,
there's just
so,
nothing that interests me about Stephen King. I mean, I know why.
I like his novels quite a bit.
Yeah.
So go back and look at this one.
But it definitely feels like that. Mark Guggenheim was the one who adapted it. And, you know, again, it's if you're not loving Spider-Woman, maybe over here.
Kevin Smith's Green Hornet number one came out, and I did not buy it because I'm done with Kevin Smith.
I know. I was really curious. It's from Dynamite, and much like Doc Savage, I don't know anything about Green Hornet. So. Yeah. There's no nostalgia factor to enjoy. I don't know if this is a reboot. I don't know if this is different, but...
Did Phil Hester do the art?
He did the breakdowns.
Oh, okay.
The art was fairly standard.
Was it Walt Simon? Walt Flanagan again, or no?
If it was Walt Simonson, that would
be great.
That,
yeah, that would be
I would have bought that, too. It was somebody else. I don't know.
You bought it anyway.
Yeah, I read it for the hell of it. It wasn't good. it wasn't that it was, like, bad. It's just, like, I My 23-year-old self would be rebelling, but Kevin Smith's not good. Yeah. Like, he's only got a couple of tricks in his well, and that's all. And then cop out thanks to the box office is all I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
It turns out the whole Southwest thing was actually a promotion for this book, and it just missed.
It missed its target. It just...
Oh, entirely. No one mentioned Green Hornet 1 at all, and everyone at Dynamite's like, this should be gold. What's going on?
Just say Green Hornet. Oh, jeez.
There were 15 cover sets for it.
Yeah.
Dynamite.
I bet John Cassaday did one.
All I know from Green Hornet is when they showed up in Batman and Bruce Lee had to fight Burt Ward, and Burt Ward was too scared to actually spar with him in the scene.
Nice. Because Burt Ward's an actor and Bruce Lee's a kid.
Well, no, Burt Ward was a black belt, but it's still Bruce Lee.
Yeah, jeez.
If you watch the scene, he's flapping his wings like a chicken. They were making him call him Chicken Boy.
Nice.
He was a black belt.
Huh.
Wow, who knew that? So those are the books that came out this week. Go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can see all the books that came out, and you can do your pull list, and you can rate and review them. And we want to highlight some reviews from the iFanbase. And our first one comes from Fraggle Uprising, who reviewed Detective Comics number 862 and gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And at the time of this recording, 2.9% of the iFanbase made it their pick of the week. And Fraggle Uprising explains himself with this. I feel like Detective Comics is starting to lag a little. The current Batwoman story doesn't feel nearly as vibrant as what came before. I almost feel like Rucka's holding back, waiting for the Batwoman standalone book. This is not to say that the Batwoman feature is bad, just that it's not as excellent like the first couple of arcs were.
I have something to say to Fraggle Uprising. You are the one who is wrong. There it is. I've said it.
I got to be honest. I didn't feel it as much as this issue.
This issue wasn't as good.
It was. I thought the art wasn't as good, and art felt really rushed. And
I think that there were a couple of pages in here that I was continually impressed with sort of the layouts of the pages and some of the parallel storytelling that was happening in this one. I really
liked the art. I didn't have a problem with the art. Except story-wise, it was very much a middle.
Page where Batman falls out of the back of the ambulance and then she's thrown out the back of a truck and then he's sitting on the ground as the truck drives away and then she is too. Like, it's back and forth. I thought they were much more consistent with the coloring in this one, so you could tell what was happening when.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing they took a little bit of a cue from the last one confusing some people, and they made this one clear, like what was happening when, like all the all the pages with Batwoman.
I think
are
a little too much, though. I don't know.
I didn't mind it. Yeah, I didn't mind it. Yeah. This I probably would have made this my pick of the week. I really like. I got to some of the pages and like that one page with them falling out of the trucks. That was the first time I've seen a page in a while and be like, I want to own that page. Like right. that really got to me. And then the other side of it being that I thought this was the strongest question story that I've read in a really long time. Like out of all these, this was
the
best.
Well, it was nearly half the book. I mean, it was nearly – I felt like it was a big – I felt there was less Batwoman story and more question. Maybe I'm wrong, but it felt like it was like half the book.
It was about half. Yeah. But the question story was great this time out. Yeah. I thought the Huntress question thing was fantastic. And like the continuing joke where Renee finds out about Oracle basically and just keeps going, you? Her?
Yeah, no,
I love that she wears a costume that no one else has her in any other book.
Hey, whatever.
Yeah. I think it's funny. I have no problem with that. I just think it's a better costume than the other ones. But
that's a question story that I was really into reading, and I was impressed. So much for the backup being non-important.
Not mattering. Yeah, exactly.
I'm gonna redeem myself. Ready, Ron?
Let's hear it.
With your snarkiness.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, Josh. Everyone says Jock sucks, so apparently you're wrong.
Yep.
GL Warm 76. Reviewed Ultimate Comics Avengers number 5 and gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And 0.05% of you made it your pick of the week. And GeoWarm76 says, this is exactly the type of book that the Ultimate Universe is made for. I love Marvel's 616 Universe, but the pressure to avoid delays and stick closely to established continuity handcuffs creators. In the Ultimate Universe, creators are free to tell their story without worrying about delays, messing up other books, or intricate continuity. Specifically, in Ultimate Comics Avengers, Miller and Pacheco are telling a kick-ass action blockbuster that is a pure joy.
Yeah, it drives me crazy that I can't resolve what's going on between this book, Ultimate Avengers, and Ultimate New Ultimates.
Yeah, I don't care. I like the
concept. Yeah. I don't get that.
I don't get that either.
I saw the two this week, and I was like, wait, what?
Exactly.
And I didn't venture any further than that. Yeah. But I was like, but I thought that the Ultimates were your Avengers.
I just have to shake my head and not care. That's all I can do.
Ugh. Yeah, I mean, you can either enjoy your comics or not.
Yeah,
and,
I choose not to.
I wouldn't have bought these anyway, so it didn't really matter.
Well, he's absolutely right. This is like the most fun action adventure thrill ride that they've got going in the Ultimate.
It is.
Even
it's
more
true.
So than Spider-Man's not really an action film. It's a teen drama. This is a balls to the wall action.
I want you guys to know that no matter what happens to me, parenthood otherwise, I still don't like fun.
Good.
Well, you shouldn't have read this issue because in the first page a baby gets thrown out of a window.
That's true. I think Pacheco's art is great and it's been great in this arc though. I really do like it. It's very clean. I like what he's been doing with it.
I love his portrayal of this Steve Rogers as being the super badass that is 14 steps ahead of everybody, which he does a little bit better than they do in the 616 in terms of planning. And even when Captain America's captured, he's not really captured. He already knows how to escape, and he's already ready to escape. Yeah. And
these handcuffs are the joke.
Yeah,
it's a great line.
Yeah, no, I think they do that better here than they do in the regular Marvel universe.
Anytime you have the Cosmic Cube in play, I'm down with it.
It was a great use of the Cosmic Cube as well.
Yeah.
I really like this one a lot, yeah.
Excellent. So go to ifanboy.com/comics and write your reviews.
For the first time in over 2 decades, a National Comics Entertainment Convention is coming to downtown Chicago. Make your plans to attend C2E2, the Chicago Comic and Entertainment Expo, this April 16th through the 18th, and join thousands of comic book fans, creators, celebrities for a weekend of fun and excitement in the city of broad shoulders. Special guests for this show include Alex Ross, Jeff Smith, Jeff Johns, Mike Mignola, Ethan Van Sciver, and hundreds of your favorite creators. Tickets are only $25 for a one-day pass, $50 for the entire weekend. And for a full list of guests, events, and to purchase tickets, visit C2E2.com, but there's more. C2E2 and iFanboy are giving you a chance to win tickets to an exclusive C2E2 merchandise before the big week, and we'll be giving away one amazing VIP package, 3 weekend passes, 5 exclusive C2E2 posters signed by creator and guest of honor Alex Ross, 13 limited edition C2E2 t-shirts. The grand prize is lunch with a as-yet-unnamed editor from Marvel Comics.
Spin the wheel. Who are you going to get?
I hope it's Whacker.
Entering the contest is easy. Just visit www.c2e2.com/iFanboy. Enter your name and your email. And that is all it takes. We'll be drawing winners from all of the entries on March 19th. Stay tuned for more exciting news for our official C2E2 after-party plans and more ways to win tickets and exclusive merchandise following C2E2 on Twitter at C2E2.com.
Yeah, seriously, go to C2E2.com/iFanboy. Sign up if you're in the Chicagoland area and you go to this. You're going to want – there's a ton of stuff.
I've already signed up.
There's a ton of stuff. You can't win. There's a ton of stuff to give away, and you don't want to miss out on that.
We're going to have our official close-down around comics after-party.
Yes, we're going to piss on their graves.
Why do you got to be mean about how I read ads, by the way? All of a sudden, it's just bash the fuck out of Josh.
It's not how you read ads. It's how you read.
Yeah, I'm not read good.
So, Josh, why have you come back to the show? We were all, you see, everyone was using. Josh had a baby. He filed for his paternity leave in HR. Carol in HR approved it. You were off until April. Why are you back?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. It's just like a drunk hallucination that's going on right now. No, literally, Connor's like, so you're going to do a book of the month? And I was like, oh, I guess I have to. And then, like, it was this sheer calling. Like, I was like, I can do this. And I literally, I don't know if what I wrote was in English. So I'd like to apologize for that.
Well, of all books, this would be the one that you could
okay.
Take. Yeah.
As you know, we've said this many times before, picking a book of the month is awful.
Yep.
Like the idea of making it something that you're genuinely excited about, something that's hopefully timely and something that people don't know about. All these things together make it very challenging. So I'm in the hospital for 48 hours or something like that. And I came home and like there's a big stack of mail and my dog's like, where the fuck have you been? And then I open the envelope and out tumbles a copy of Aphrodisiac delivered like from unto on high. And I was like, well, what's this? And a couple of weeks before this, I had a conversation with a friend of mine and he just goes, have you seen this Aphrodisiac book? And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he like, this is a friend of mine who never really gushes about comics. And I was like, all right, I'll check it out, whatever.
Now, you should mention Aphrodisiac, published by Ad House Books.
Yes, I'm sorry. By Brian Maruca and Jim Rugg.
Who I love Jim Rugg from his days in the Plain Janes and the Minx Line and stuff like that. Yeah. So.
And this book was a revelation. I'm going to go ahead and put it that way. I mean, like, I know before I said I don't like fun, but this is the most fun that I have had reading a graphic novel or a comic book, and I don't know how long.
I am so fucking happy because what was funny is that iFanboy is all about planning. So when Connor emails Josh and says, can you do the book of the month? And Josh is like, I'm pretty sure I can. In my head, I'm like, all right, well, if he can't, I'll, because Connor did the last one. I said, I can always fill in, we can swap and I can do it. And if you hadn't been able to, I was going to do Aphrodisiac as the book of the month.
And that was really the thing is I didn't want to waste it. I was like, This is a really good call.
And the thing was is that like I was definitely I kind of wanted to do Aphrodisiac when you were going to be out on paternity leave because I was convinced that there was no way that you would appreciate this book as much as I liked it. And I was so happy to hear that you liked it. It was great.
Let's talk about it just from a perspective what this is. It's loosely based. It's a story about a blaxploitation type hero named Aphrodisiac, who's kind of he's like a pimp, but you know what? It's funny. There's a very loose continuity that goes throughout it. Like as if you were to read like superhero comics over the course of 10 or 15 years, like the details of the story would change a little bit.
Yep.
And they don't really, and that actually happens within the course of this book, which isn't that long. I think it's less than 100 pages. Yeah. The thing is a total package. You open it up and the cover's beautiful, but it has no title on it. So like they went with design over saleability.
Yep.
Right away, you open up the inside cover, like the I don't know what that's called, but the part that's usually blank.
Yeah.
Story starts right there. So you just start reading, and like they look like blown up old comic strips with this like dot pitch coloring, and it just goes from there. And then they switch styles, and they start telling a different story, and that part is done. It's produced to look like an old comic page. It's yellow. It's you know, you see the color coming out of the lines and it looks like a certain kind of comic from a certain time. Then you switch the page and there's like a black and white sort of looks like an old Marvel. Is it Epic? Those kind of things.
Yeah, yep.
Like it's just a dinosaur chasing Aphrodisiac through the jungle. Oh. And it just skips around all over the place. It's all pasted up to look like it's like a real old cover.
And they throw a bunch of – there's all these little kind of vignette little stories. But in between, there are all these little random covers and random pages from the books and stuff like that.
It's like following one character through the ages, buying one of those like best of books where you get to see a character in the 60s and 70s and 90s.
Did you read this too, Connor? Did you read it?
Oh, yeah.
Did you like it?
I loved it. I thought that for me the best part wasn't so much the stories, was the interstitial stuff.
The covers were easily the strongest part.
What I thought was so fascinating is that the Brian Maruca wrote some really funny shit, like really played with the blaxploitation stuff and really played like – I love how like in the individual stories, like the little origin paragraph in the first page was different from issue to issue.
Yes.
And some of the dialogue was funny and all the stuff like that. But what it really read to me, it was like it was a love letter for like 70s comics.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
It felt like you know – 70s comics is like Luke, not just Luke Cage, but
no, all the whole genre. Yeah, Dracula's in it. Like they're all the there's horror stuff in it. There's like, yes, blaxploitation was the main theme, but it spanned the entire comic industry for the 70s, basically.
Yeah. And there were literal real laugh out loud moments on almost every page.
Yep.
I mean, it was entertaining from start to finish. It's not what I would call safe humor. It's not for kids. It's not like that. But like, and it's just over being very adolescent.
Yeah.
Just it's barely there, but it's just over that edge. It's just sharp enough that like you can't help but laugh at it, even though you kind of think maybe I shouldn't. Yeah. There's this really fun little sequence where they go called "Death Comes to Aphrodisiac," and it's like 1, 2, 3, 4 Yeah, so there's like 3 pages that are just slightly different variations on the same story, and it's how he ends up dead, and then like. Sort of doesn't fight the Grim Reaper, but it's a woman who just wanted to sleep with him.
Well, and what I love, like at one point, like he's got to fight God, and so, like, and so they go through different trials, and they're playing tennis, and then it's like, oh God,
and that looks and like that one looks like a Jack Kirby comic, and other stuff looks like a Jerry Conway comic, and it's not so much that Rugg is drawing in different styles for each one; he is in a couple of them, but it's kind of similar. But the production around it is really the part that's impressive.
The whole package itself. I mean, like I hate to be this kind of like to say this kind of thing, but like Eisner Watch right now, this book has got to get nominated.
I can't imagine it wouldn't.
Yeah.
But also like then like they get to Aphrodisiac goes to fight a giant bug and you have to turn the whole book on its side and read it that way like a different kind of, and then he drives his cat like he uses his Cadillac like a fist to beat up the bug where he drives it up a ramp and then gives him an uppercut, and it doesn't make sense and it's not realistic and there's no real thread to the story, but it's awesome.
Yeah.
And the thing is, to make this work, it has to be really good and really funny. And it is on every page. And there's these ridiculously stupid little captions on the covers that are, you know, just like
very risque.
Very risque. Like,
well, you posted the one on your Pick of the Week review. I remember I emailed you. Oh my goodness! Like, I hadn't read the book at that point. I'd gotten it after you'd written the review, and it's a very risque. He's lighting a cigarette for a woman who's sitting in front of him, and it looks very much like oral sex. And
he's pushing his crotch towards her,
and she has to swallow her pride, according to the caption. It was
before that, the true story of a woman driven crazy by too much chocolate.
Yeah,
it's just like the play on words is just fantastic.
In this issue, special guest star Super Beaver.
Yep.
Will Aphrodisiac survive the bush? Like it goes on and on.
What I love is like, you know, he's a pimp and he refers to all his women by numbers, you know, specific numbers in trouble, whatever. But then he's got the one character who's his accountant and he's like, she ain't much to look at, but she's totally hot, you know. Yeah. Like it's just like
Aphrodisiac loves them all, baby.
Yeah, exactly.
It does.
Oh.
I mean, like literally, it's almost hard to explain. Like we're talking about things that we liked about it.
Yeah.
But if any of this sounds vaguely funny to you, I mean, this is the book of the year so far.
Yeah, totally.
It's
agreed.
The one to beat.
Totally, this is the one. And Jim Rugg's like the production and the design and the aging of panels and pages and stuff like that is a big thing. But Jim Rugg's art is just so good. It's just like he just does enough. He just does what he has to, and it's so good. So
and Maruka's funny. It's consistently funny, which in comics is no small thing.
Yeah.
So this was an easy pick, and I was really glad. Like it was just everything came at the right time. I mean, it was just really
happy that all three of us liked it, because I was so afraid that it was going to be one of those crazy indie books that I read that you guys are just like, yeah, whatever, you know, and roll your eyes at. But I was, oh, yes, good. Good stuff. Good pick. Good.
That
good.
Very rarely happens, by the way.
Josh, no. I missed you, Josh. I missed you. Oh. I'm glad you're back.
Well, yeah, I don't believe you. Very mean to me. I love that the cover to the Aphrodisiac final issue, which is his head as a giant mushroom cloud.
Yeah, it's just the afro.
It's just, it's so good.
Oh, and I love the two issues with the Red Devil, the back-to-back ones where we saw one was from Red Devil comic, one was from Aphrodisiac, and they put in the verse Aphrodisiac on the cover, the treatment, like how Marvel used to do it. Oh, it was great. Great.
Really, just wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like $15 cover. I mean,
well,
go get this one.
You can get it. How much you can get it in stock trades?
Less than that. Did you write that on here?
Yeah. See, this is why we laughed. You can get it from in stock trades for $11.21. So it's cheap. There's no reason not to.
You almost have no excuse at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And it's one of those things that they did as a labor of love, and I hope it blows up and I hope it makes them a lot of money and brings them a lot of success, because it's something special.
It's fucking funny. It's really good.
So I'm supposed to read this ad, I assume.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you should have put my name on the part. Tom's supposed to read it. So where's he? Oh, In Stock Trades is our sponsor, and we thank them very much for that. You can save up to 37% off your books, free shipping on all orders over $50. There are over 9,000 trade paperbacks in stock and available for order, also hardcovers. New releases are listed every single Wednesday, and your order usually ships within 48 hours of when you order it. So to go to www.instocktrades.com. And don't forget about the Summit City Comic Con coming up on May 22nd. And you can learn all about that at summitcitycomiccon.com. That's in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And they'll have a bunch of talent from the Midwest there. It's just a nice little show. And I believe last year they had a lot of stuff on sale too. You could get a lot of stuff for very
well. This
very
is the first year they've done a con. They had last year they had a big sale. They had a big sale at In Stock Trades, but this is the first year where they're actually doing a con. So Fort Wayne Indianians, this is your opportunity. You know what I just thought of? The whole In Stock Trades, we're waiting for the trade, has never been easier. Is that actually their slogan, or just what Around Comics says? And well, now I think it's their slogan.
We've never gotten that copy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't. I think that. Yeah.
So Chris was doing a little copywriting,
a little there. Branding.
He was
there.
Off. He was off the script.
Yeah, in stock, easy because it is. You know.
So anyway, thank you, In Stock Trades. Right. Go to InStockTrades.com, SummitCityComicCon.com. All right, we are going to skip the emails and voicemails this week because we just had to spend so much time talking to Josh about the comics and talk about the book of the month. So we'll come back next week. But if you want to get on the show, email us at contact@ifanboy.com or call us at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
We are going to be in Emerald City Comic Con, like we said, about 30 minutes ago. So if you're going to be in the area, come
down. You're going to be there a half an hour ago?
Yes.
Great, Scott! Sunday, 1 p.m., the panel. Please come. Room 6, yes. Something. 6B.
6E.
6E, yeah. 6E. Yes, that's what it is.
You'll see us on the floor because the floor of Emerald City Comic Con is not that big. So come say hi, and we'll tell you where it's going to be. Yeah.
If I was deaf and reading lips and you were saying 6E, I would think that you were saying sexy.
Yeah. Well, I was saying sexy. All right, so we've got t-shirts. Go to ifanboy.com/store. You can get the final remaining few Battle Pug t-shirts that are left, as well as you can pre-order the Fear Agent shirt, the only Fear Agent shirt in existence, as sanctioned by Rick Remender, with art by Jerome Opeña. Order yours today.
Oliver peed on my Battle Pug shirt.
I saw the tweet. ifanboy.com/store.
I will be talking to Joe Harris of Ghost Project. That's Project with a K. That's a new book coming out from Oni Press with art by Steve Rolston, an artist who I adore.
Awesome.
So that's on the Don't Miss podcast. It'll be coming out on Monday. So don't miss the Don't Miss.
Yeah, make sure you go to iTunes and subscribe to it if you haven't already, because last week we talked to Janine Schaefer, the editor of Girl Comics. We're talking to every week a different creator about a different book. It's the one to listen to. And actually this week on ifanboy.com, you're not going to miss out working on a little bit of an announcement with a major publisher. So you want to keep an eye out on ifanboy.com this week, around the middle of the week or so, right?
Yeah. I was just like, what is that? Oh, right. I'm
right.
Doing
yeah, you're working on that actually. Yeah. So make sure you look out on ifanboy.com in around the middle of the week.
Middle or so?
You might see something exclusive to ifanboy.com, so check it out.
Fine. I'm writing the aphrodisiac comics that they're putting out. That's the announcement.
No. They're from Ad House.
No.
Yes.
From one of the major publishers, so check it out.
Ad House is a pretty major publisher.
True,
check out ifanboy.com for the Pick of the Week review. That would be from Ron. Check it out for the Book of the Month review. That would be from Josh. And all of our in-depth discussion. We've been talking about Avengers this week. There was the cartoon. There was the new Avengers lineup, which is the same as the one that's in the book right now. and all the stuff that goes on ifanboy.com, you must check it out. That is the hub. That's where you find out the information. That's where you know what's going on.
These Avengers aren't new at all. They're the same Avengers. You fucking liars.
Look, you can also go to ifanboy.com/about for all of our social networking links. You can become our friend on Twitter or Facebook or all kinds of random places where people spend their time instead of working in their office.
Yeah. Wait a minute. You saying that Luke Cage is new? You're a fucking liar is what you are.
Last week, we also have a video show that comes out every Wednesday on ifanboy.com or revision3.com/ifanboy. Last week, we did the Marvel versus DC debate.
Which went over rather well, I thought.
There was a lot of interesting discussion, very polite. It never went off the handle. I applaud all of you.
Yes. Yeah.
I was very surprised, I'll be honest.
I was happy to see
Connor thought it was going to bring about Armageddon.
Yep.
Next week, we're looking at inkers, letterers, and colorists. Those folks who don't get all the press, but are just as important to your comic book as anyone else.
Those guys who are so important that they don't even get their own show.
Be nice. Be nice.
And next week, minorities.
Edit point. So if you want to call, if you want to complain to us about what Josh just said, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com.
Oh, josh@ifanboy.com.
Yeah, that was satirical social commentary.
I know. Email us at contact@ifanboy.com. Leave a voicemail, 1-888-326-2697. That's 1-888-FANBOYS. Any questions, comments, concerns, please leave your name. A short question, about 30 seconds. Please don't ramble or call 9 times in a row. You know who you are.
I needed to know where we put the milk. If you really like us, one thing that you can do that's super easy is go to iTunes and write a review for this podcast or the video show or the Don't Miss podcast. But those are how things get seen, and they really help us get the word out there and get more people to discover the show. Because as soon as people can find it, they find it becomes the central point of their lives.
Yep.
And that scares me deeply. But you can also tell people about the show or the site at your comic shop, or people who are just random people on the street. You'd be like, hey, you like comics? No? Well, if you did, you should go to iFanboy. Deal with it. Hey, Mom.
All right.
What?
Well, Josh, is it good to be back in the saddle? Did you miss it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah, totally. I'm so tired.
Yeah.
I'm barely – like when you guys were talking in the middle, I was just like my head hit the mic like funk. Oh.
Nice. All right. Well, yeah, we'll let you get back to sleep then. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I am Josh. This is Tom again, motherfucker.
I'm so tired. Tired.